Hello and welcome to Game of Thrones Offseason. Tonight we're discussing the writing of Game of Thrones and the elements that make it one of the greatest shows of all time. Stay tuned.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Hello and welcome back. We're always so happy to be here. This once-a-month show has really kept me going, really made my life a little bit more exciting, and really made me more excited about Game of Thrones coming back.
Seriously.
And we've got a special treat for you guys on the panel tonight. But first, I'll introduce Ryan Malady.
Hello, everybody. It's always good to be here. Every month, like she said, I love it. My life is way better than it's ever been ever since we've done this show. It really is like, it's like a drug. A once-a-month fix.
Yes. And I lied. You guys get two treats tonight. Your first treat is Amber Plaster, who was with us all of last season.
Thank you. Welcome I've never back. Been introduced as a treat before. Thank you.
And we have another special treat here from the USC Marshall Business School. He is a professor of entrepreneurship, and he's also a written, published novelist of a nonfiction book, two musicals, dozens of business school case studies and articles,
but
he's here to talk about the writing of Game of Thrones,
and
Jeremy Dinn.
All of those are treats, you know, since we're talking about treats, most definitely.
Love it. Well, thank you guys all for making it here tonight, and it's one of my favorite subjects of all time, the writing of any TV show. Mm-hmm. It's always so important to me because I went to school for writing, and I'm just obsessed when there's great characters where there's a blur between good and bad, and what's really morally clear isn't obvious. And the thing about Game of Thrones is I love to get lost in the wonders of this magical imagery that they provide for us. And it's like getting into our first element of what makes this such a great show, the escapism, cinematic escape, if you will.
Let's see what you did there.
I would say, I mean, obviously, I'm like obsessed with escapism. What's better than forgetting about all your troubles, whoever you're dating, what's going on at work, and fully immersing into a television show like Game of Thrones? And I'll tell you, when I'm watching Kit Harington, I am not worried about work tomorrow.
I love the way you put that, escapism. I mean, I feel like it's something I wish they taught at school. Jeremy, why don't they teach escapism at school?
Well, most everyone is trying to escape my class, so.
I don't believe that. No.
There's just something about fantasy, just the subject of fantasy that kind of transcends every other fictional genre of writing, where I feel like it's easiest to do world building, and I know you wanted to talk about that.
Definitely.
It literally picks you up and puts you in someplace new rules, new environments that will never exist in the world that we live in, but good writing can put it in a way that is believable. And it makes rules that the world has to follow. Mm-hmm. And even though there are dragons and even though there's magic, it still is real. When you're watching some, you know, worlds like Harry Potter or Lord of the Rings, and you believe it because they set the rules up in the very beginning, and moving forward, you belong to those rules.
Yeah.
And Game of Thrones does a great job of not breaking those rules that they established from the very beginning. And it's a world you just can escape into.
I mean, I feel like the pilot is a perfect pilot because they do a good job of setting up the rules, and then you see one of the main characters die. And you're like, oh, so that's how this is going to be. Okay. And
right.
So you're almost like they set you up, and then you're turned upside down, and then you're like, the show is crazy. This world has rules, but it has no rules. And they keep – you're not quite sure – what is sacred in this show when you first, especially in the first season. I remember thinking in the first season, like, what is happening with Walder Frey? Like, I remember just thinking there was like so much more to it because we just didn't know anything about that character. And I was like, there's going to be something to this. There was nothing to it. I just didn't know what the world was because it slowly got revealed to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I also wanted to know the rules of the White Walkers and like how far they could come, whatever, and they didn't give us White Walker details till several seasons later.
Right.
But they introduced that to us, being like, okay, this is here, now we're going to take it back.
Right.
So good.
The White Walkers are one of those characters in the show that it's almost like they are the rule breakers, because they, like you said, didn't reveal what they were capable of until, and we still don't even know.
We still don't even know they're sentient.
They seem to have their, the whites definitely aren't, right?
I hope not.
They don't think, they don't feel, they just kind of are pre-programmed to do what the White Walker's bidding is. Yeah. But the White Walkers themselves have this element of, and not just the White Walkers, but the Night King is really, I think, where the biggest mystery lies.
Yeah.
Because the White Walkers, we see that, okay, even the last season when a White Walker was killed and all the whites fell down dead.
Right.
Like, wow, okay, so there's a rule. And, you know, when you see Jon Snow clashing swords with one of the White Walkers, and you're like, okay, so White Walkers are, you know, they get, you know, hurt by dragon glass and Valyrian steel. And we're still discovering rules as we go along, and we're okay with that.
Yeah.
We're, you know, if there was all of a sudden Jon Snow could fly, we'd be like, no, that's not okay. We set up the rules, but he comes back to life, and that's okay. It's interesting. Jeremy, what's your take on rule-breaking and rule-bending in writing?
You know, Daenerys has the very famous speech about the wheel, which is essentially that the rules, you know, the way things will always turn out, and she talks about breaking that wheel. So who knows? Maybe ultimately the winner of the Game of Thrones, you win or you die, is the one that rewrites the rules. So maybe we're going to see a different take on that this coming season.
Yeah, I feel like you guys are skipping ahead a little bit to the world building, because what that is, which is totally fine, we can get ahead to it, but, I mean, he has completely rewritten an entire world, all of the rules. He's rewritten, you know, people like a princess who should be innocent throughout this thing, whole thing, Daenerys, and then we see, you know, she's, you know, killing innocent people and reigning in power and actually being very sexual, which we're seeing this blonde princess, which you wouldn't normally see. We're seeing weddings become bloodbaths. It's totally not what you expect. They're introducing something, a storyline that we're very used to, and then breaking it.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing is, I feel like this show is really gives itself to the rising mass intelligence of people, that just the new millennials and, you know, all their computers, and they're very intelligent. And the show is really catering to like the 18 to 30 year olds or the people who watch it the most. And I feel like the show has almost created a new genre for us. Because now we're expected to have not just great characters, not just great plot lines, not just great, you know, all the lines, which we're going to play a little game later. Ryan has designed a fun game for us later to guess who said what line, so stay tuned for that. But just the fact that this show has included, which we're going to get more into, but just a far more intelligent thread. Most of the shows on TV, they have an A, B, C storyline. This like, they have A through Z. I don't know. There's, like, so many storylines. You have to be doing nothing else but watching the show when you're watching the show, or you're not going to know the
names.
That's true. You're not going to be able to follow the plot lines.
Oh,
and
I
that's
know.
Why you have to watch our show.
I had a friend who I was trying to get into it for a few years, and I said, you have to start binge-watching this show. And I was over at his house, and the first episode he started watching, he was emailing, he was doing his laundry,
No.
And I stormed out in disgust and said, you're never going to get this. Come back to me in a year when you've devoted
that was the appropriate response.
Yeah, I remember I tried to show a buddy Game of Thrones, and I looked over, and he's, like, texting. I'm like, no, pause it. We need your full attention. We need it. Jeremy, I want to ask you something. How important is it, Kristen was saying how there's, like, A to Z plot lines, how important is it to, like, this show in particular, that it was written as a book first?
Well, number one, there was an element I wanted to touch on there.
That,
you know, you talked about that ABC format, literally like ABC, like the networks, you know, when we had only three or four places to see TV, everything had to be so tested, so tried, so true. The formats, the sitcom format, and the way it was filmed, this is pushed. All of that. I mean, obviously, with a, you know, just even from a business standpoint, they were able to test and get in a much cheaper way and get so many more fans and build it up over the years. That's why you've had more things based on graphic novels and comic books, because you're not just trying to impress, you know, five TV executives in a room now. You can build up your whole network of people, so to speak, your whole fan base beforehand. So I do think it's definitely key. They saw that the long story really worked, not just a one-hit wonder of one cool book, but it was able to retain fans over many years.
I really feel like the only time a writer gets to really put their work out there is through a book that's adapted to a movie, because that's the only times executives know, hey, we're not going to lose our jobs because we're capitalizing on an existing audience. Mm-hmm. And that's why I've started writing novels. Stay tuned. No, but I think you're totally right there. And let's talk about the world building a little bit, how you guys were talking about all the rules. They really introduced new religions, the God of Light, you know, all the different religions that they've introduced, all the different characters who kind of represent a different time in history. Mm-hmm. I mean, just the world building in general, they are reflective of things in our history, but he really wrote all his own rules.
I mean, yeah, I mean, come on, we have a show every month that we have, there's enough content for us to break down just, you know, just the wardrobe, you know, just the economics of this world that doesn't really exist except in our minds and in our hearts.
He created different languages.
You know, yes. There you go.
Wrote his own
within
language.
His worlds.
Yeah.
And religions.
It's yeah. An entire
and then
family
laced
trees
magic on top of it.
So much content.
Like
that they're
seven,
you know,
gods. I just thought about those.
Yeah, there's
the weirwood tree.
Yes.
To where this world is so real that they're even making a prequel that's was it 1,000 years or is it more than that? I think it was several thousand years. It takes place several thousand years before our
easily
known story of King's Landing. And it's like, if you didn't have that universe so well established, there's no way that it would be able to stand up on its own like that.
Yeah.
I mean, you have universes like Marvel Universe where you can just take these characters and put them in different situations and watch them play out, good versus evil. Game of Thrones kind of has transcended that, and that's interesting. You put it, it's kind of its own new genre.
Right.
It is fantasy. What would you call that genre if you had to give it a new name?
Show on television genre?
Well, I think it's just a really well-done version of fantasy. Usually, fantasy shows, like, say, Xena Warrior Princess.
Yes.
Do not have the budget that Game of Thrones has, or the fandom, which of course, fandom gets you more budget, and then HBO lets you play a lot more than any other network. They can be a lot more violent, a lot more sexual, mm-hmm. a lot more shocking. So I feel like a lot of other fantasy shows haven't been able to afford the luxury that this show has been able to get.
Right. Question for you guys. Could we pay attention to the long monologues if there wasn't sexual acts going on in the background?
We?
I feel like they have this amazing recipe.
I don't know.
For everybody, right? So it's like you're not just sitting there watching like Shakespeare on TV.
Yeah.
There's all these different elements going on at the same time where if you don't, you know, love the language, you can just watch two women in the background naked, you know, having at it.
Wait,
so,
what's your two-screen experience? I'm not getting these DVD extras. Where are you getting those?
I feel like it happens all the time, you know.
The sex-splaining?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Tyrion is going on, you know.
It's very heavy in the first season.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. Well, I want to get into our second point, which we kind of skipped over, the character development. But Jeremy, you touched on it, on how this was based on the series of novels, A Song of Ice and Fire by George R.R. Martin, and that, you know, it's the long game that they're playing. And I completely agree with you because, I mean, think about it. You've had all these books to further develop the characters, and you can literally pick from them the best points. Someone's already put that all out for you, thought about it for years and years and years, and you can literally just pick the highlights and put that on TV. And he's already planned it all out. I always think the best shows on TV, the best season's always the first season, because that's all they have planned. They don't have 7, 8 books already, like, thought about in their head, you know? So it's like this show, there was an end before there was a beginning.
Well, it's its own form of writing, the art of the long story, where, you know, when I was writing my novel, one thing you realize is you can't accomplish everything in one chapter. You have to have laid the groundwork sort of accidentally, behind the scenes, very subtly, 5, 10, 20 chapters earlier with lots of little clues. And that's, I think, one of the geniuses of the show. That's what it did maybe better than I think anything that's been on. And it was very contradicting some of the conventional wisdom, which was starting to be like, we need self-contained episode. We need these episodic procedural shows and things like this. And this came on at the height of that when people were kind of against the long story. But this show kind of reestablished it. They were very skilled at it. Obviously, George was very skilled at it. But I do think they've kind of fumbled with it maybe in the last season where they
because there's no more books.
They smushed some stuff together. They lost that art of the long story. They lost the art of character development by via journey and things like that. And I hope they reestablish it.
Yeah, it's interesting how you mentioned that. When you go around Hollywood right now, no one's buying procedural shows. It's all primetime, hour-long, serialized dramas. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Game of Thrones is a big part of that culture change. Everything you look at now on TV is just like, even when it comes to teen stuff, teen dramas, it's all hour-long and it's all serialized.
Well, and just technologically and business model-wise, using the business school professor in me, you know, Netflix and the binge-watching has really brought that back because... Yeah. If you have the temperament, you can watch it week by week and keep up, or you can say, oh, I have a long weekend, I'll watch 10 or 12 episodes right now.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's guaranteed eyeballs.
Mm-hmm. Right. So also I want to get into the character development, which is a huge part of the writing. You know, they ask us to learn about the history of these characters, their motivations, and then we have to get intimately acquainted with them, and we think that they're going to be predictable, and then they use classic manipulation to change the story around on us. Mm-hmm. One of your favorite characters... Littlefinger. Classic manipulation. That guy was never predictable. So just having these complex characters to the point where it would be a great discussion for us to debate who's good and bad. I mean, that's Ryan's favorite character, and I think he's an awful, evil man. Mm-hmm. So it's like this show literally makes the concept of good and bad moot. And I say every movie out there is only as good as the arch enemy, you know, like if it doesn't have someone like the Joker, which I think is, you know, the Knight. What's the newest?
Dark Knight.
That was, you know, one of the best movies of all time because the Joker was so well established and you really liked him. If you don't like whoever the enemy is, you know, the antagonist of a story, how can you possibly, you know, really invest?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like most movies that I don't think are that great is because I don't understand the motivations of the enemy. Mm-hmm. It's like some guy that we never see his face and he just wants to blow up everything, you know, and we never get his motivations or his history or why.
Mm-hmm. That's why for me, James Bond went a little wrong for a while because everyone was just the megamaniacal, did I pronounce that right? But wanted to, you know, drill a hole through the earth and, you know, destroy everything. And then they recaptured, I think, some of the more subtle elements of the villains.
I think a big part of their turn was after Austin Powers came out and just totally satire their entire genre. And they said, okay, well, let's do it a little bit differently because you're right. It really is a joke if they're only after the $1 billion. Where if you look at a character like Joffrey, I mean, yeah, he's arguably evil, but... you got to look at the environment in which he was raised. You start to empathize with, you know, him and his family and their point of view, the world that they live in, and good and bad gets blurred, and that's the most rewarding part. As a viewer, you're given the opportunity to see different vantage points. And there's not a lot of good and bad out there that does that.
I had a lot of empathy for Cersei, especially. Mm-hmm. I mean, well, in the show, but especially also reading it and realizing that. She had to dull her shine so much to stay alive and to stay in power and to be like, yes, honey, you're right. Like so much. And then like when she finally gets into power, she's just worn thin. Like she is just she's so brittle. And then she loses her last child. And you're like, oh my goodness. What is going to happen now? Because she's just... Any form of humanity in that character just slowly gets taken from her. And I know she's a villain, but she's a villain I can empathize with.
Mm-hmm.
You're just... Oh, she's so watchable. I love her.
Pretty much everyone. Like, the Hound, he's a dick, but then you sit and you learn more about him. Him and Arya, I think, were my favorite duo throughout the series, and you start to really love the character, and you hear his story, and you start to empathize, and then it becomes more than just good and bad, and that's important.
I mean, that's the Hound is someone that struck down a butcher's boy in one of the first episodes that I think essentially threatened to rape Sansa.
Thank you for saying that. No one ever brings it up and they're like, I love the Hound. And I'm like, do you remember that he crawled into a 14-year-old's bed and said, I could rape you right now if I wanted to.
This
and then
the
crawled
book.
Back out. In the book.
In the book, though.
Right.
But, like, still.
Let me ask you
this. He's not a good person.
Jeremy, you're saying how important it was to have that long game written out when you wrote your book. And you've read the books. And we're looking at kind of the show's dynamic has changed a little bit ever since they surpassed the last book that was written. How did George R. R. Martin, or do you think that he knew where this was going when he first started writing A Song of Ice and Fire? Or do you think it was not so much?
I mean, he
played out.
I just read an interview with him today where he said, yeah, I'm excited about seeing the ending I conceived, whatever it was, 25, 30 years ago. So
I think he
had the main elements. He knew the end before he,
I think
he
you have to.
Knew the beginning.
How do you plant all the Easter eggs? How do you plant all the correct seeds if you don't know the end? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think I'm going to start there with my next book. And with that said, I want to talk about politics, which is also part of the writing. We have, you know, characters who we have to constantly consider, are they best for the throne? Even Daenerys, who I'm rooting for, she's killed, you know, Sam Tarly's family. She's done a lot of things that weren't great that want to make us consider, is she best for the throne? Mm-hmm. And also, you know, the Lannisters, this whole show is very reflective and sort of tells a story and asking us to consider, you know, what's going on in our world. Everyone denying the climate change. Our current president representing a lot of themes, you know, like the Lannisters, just power drivers, and the wall, you know, keeping our borders tight, all these things that are reflective of our society.
I think that's a really good point about, so let's just think about the billboard of Game of Thrones for pretty much every season. Okay, so you have people on thrones, right?
Right.
People running for office, okay? And then below it, it says, winter is coming, a.k.a. global warming.
Right.
It says it every time. Winter is coming, and everyone's like, yeah, but who's going to be king?
Right.
It doesn't matter if the world's ending.
It's pretty short-sighted when it's
easy. No one cares.
It's easy to look at a story from your couch and say, like, come on, like, look at the bigger picture. But then when you sit back and look at your real-world scenario, it's like, well, yeah, but I got a family, and I'm only going to live, you know, the next maybe, you know, 60 years, and that's none of that stuff is really as important as my livelihood and the environment in which I'm going to live and die in.
Yeah.
You know, we don't make 1,000-year decisions. I often think how the world would change if we just found the elixir of life and everyone started to live a few 1,000 years. All of a sudden,
living longer, so people are becoming more self-aware,
right,
and
right.
mindful of the environment because they're realizing, okay, how many generations do we have left?
Right. So just as our world's changing, the nature of storytelling itself is also
changing. Right. And that's why I really wanted to get into storytelling, because I think it's the only way to really get people to pay attention to what's going on in our world and really show them a lesson, is to get them fully immersed into a different world and to show them that perspective and that understanding, is to just face them with entertainment. And that's really the only way to get through to people.
Well, this has done that accidentally. You know, this... our real world has converged to the Game of Thrones world maybe more than we thought. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you have themes like you just mentioned, the global warming and climate change, they have the opposite happening. And the wall has become a symbol, not just in these books and movies, but in our world with the hordes beyond. So life has converged in interesting ways. I think even to the point of, didn't HBO kind of protest the a use of some of their imagery for political purposes in recent weeks. So it's gotten a little nutty in that regard.
Mm-hmm. I do want to say one more thing about the politics, is that if you're not good at politics in this Game of Thrones, you do die usually. I mean, look at Catelyn Stark and Ned. I mean, they were some of the best people in this show ever, but they did not play the political game.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, Jon Snow has been one of the most apolitical people, and that might be his appeal and his solution in the end. So it remains to be seen. I'll hold that out there as a little against the grain.
Yeah, I was a Jon Snow. I'm going to drain the swamp.
That wasn't really good. No, that's the only thing protecting the North against the South.
Yeah, right. That's right.
Yeah, so we all know that, you know, it's also, to get into our next point, the demographic that this show is aimed for also makes it, you know, really exciting to watch. There's violence, you know. This is one of my favorite parts, Oberyn Martell in the mountain.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
When I saw that, that was one of the most brutal, violent things I've ever seen in my life. And it wasn't even real, and that was insane to me. But it's written, obviously, not for, you know, the kids. This is written as an adult show, and I think that really helps it be such a great show. It's able to be smart and clever and, you know, make itself appealing to, you know, the people who are really intelligent and really willing to be fully immersed and accept that the rules are going to change. And this isn't the show that you turn on, you know, cable TV and you just pay attention to while you're doing dishes. Mm-hmm. Like, this show demands respect from you or you're not going to get it.
And at the same time, it also respects its viewers. It doesn't patronize them, but it also it reaches a lot of very wide-ranging audience. Mm-hmm. Anyone, you know, who's old enough can watch and understand it and maybe not necessarily see any parallels or make any, you know, judgments about the themes of the show, but they're entertained by it. And I feel like people have, like you said, grown up in a world that's hyper media, hyper content.
Right.
You know, we have such a short attention span nowadays, and somehow Game of Thrones still allows us to sit down, turn off the lights, and be still for an hour.
Mm-hmm. They were saying that, you know, appointment TV was done, appointment viewing was done, and that maybe only in the sports world and presidential election results do you really need to see it real time. But this has changed that. I mean, there are viewing parties again. You know, people want to see this real time. And just some stats again from the business realm, you know, 8.9 million people saw the finale live last time, which basically you can't do in network TV anymore. And I get another stat is that in absolute viewers, only one network show went up from 2016 to 2017, and that was The Bachelor. In absolute viewers, but Game of Thrones really accomplished that. So it's really, it has solved a unique problem. Who knows if it's at all illustrative to other shows and whatnot, because it's still like the only one pretty much doing this.
It's
I think there'll still be a few shows after this one goes that will demand that much respect, but it's going to be few and far between. I mean, I think the last show that I can think of before this one that wasn't a procedural format that, like, demanded, like, viewing parties and stuff was 24. Do you remember that show?
Yes.
Breaking Bad did a little bit. There's like maybe one or two
where
at
it was
a
like
time.
Long form story, and you really looked forward to it, and you binge watched it, and it was a whole event. I love that. It's rare, is what it is. It's expensive, is what it is.
They say that there's three main parts to creating a show or a film, and that's the script, the production, and the post-production. There's three main forms of art that go, you know, three stages to it. And the writing, I would say, is the most important, especially considering our theme tonight.
Yes.
But Game of Thrones also, they put in so much money, more money than any other show. I think every episode in this last final season come up, every episode was succeeded by the last as the highest budget for any TV show in the history. Did you have numbers on that too?
No.
It's like you got some. What else? You
I don't have a spreadsheet over here, man.
One of the last points I want to address before we get into our amazing game Ryan has prepared for us is what the thought-provoking show this is. The fact that it's like it brings morals into question. It's relatable in a very interesting way, and it invites us to help make these characters make decisions in that process rather than just overloading us with characters and struggles. There's so many dramas on TV right now where you just get a lot of characters and you feel like you're kind of dealing with their struggles when you're watching the show. There's shows that I can't watch because it's just like too heavy. Mm-hmm. But this show, it invites you in a thought-provoking way to consider your morals and the morals in this show
and see if you agree with the decision making and whose side you're on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You can look at things pragmatically and you can think, okay, well, I guess the Boltons had to go ahead and do that considering where, you know, they'd stand. I mean, if I were them, maybe I would do the same thing. And at the same time, you empathize with smaller relationships, and you also consider massive decisions like whether or not Cersei needed to blow up the Sept and kill thousands of people. It goes from the very small to the very big, and that all starts with the writing.
And I really feel like it's a cerebral workout that we literally crave. I mean, there's just not these shows that sort of present puzzles to us to solve while we're watching. And, I mean, my favorite part of our normal show whenever, you know, we didn't have the books anymore was just predicting. Mm-hmm. Because you don't know what's going to happen. And that's what I love about it. I feel like so many movies I watch today, I won't even watch the trailers because I watch a trailer, I know what happens.
Right.
You know, so I literally will walk into a movie just because people told me to see it.
That's the
Without knowing the genre, just knowing that it was recommended, I look up nothing. And I feel like that's what this show is anyway.
Maybe that's why they put some fake scenes in the trailer. Now.
I believe
so,
it.
So different characters are interacting. They did that in the last Avengers movie. There were a few scenes that actually didn't happen in the movie.
That's smart.
And it's hard to do that. It's hard to make it surprising because it's easy to say, okay, this is what they're expecting, so let's do the opposite and really surprise them. When in reality, you're probably expecting that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like the Scooby-Doo. Like, well, you know, who's it going to be? It's going to be the guy they saw in the first act, right? Mm-hmm. Even though, oh, you pull the mask off, and obviously it's not a real ghost. It's not you expect it to be somebody, and it's someone you expect it to be. It's hard to write a real, true, honest-to-good reward for not knowing what's going to happen.
Well, it's the benefit of having him written it for like a decade,
right?
A TV show, like time went into this and it shows.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this show could easily be all exposition.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It could 1 hour of exposition. We'd be like, what's happening? Where does Marjorie from? Like you could just spend that whole time explaining things and they still find a way to make it entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question for you guys. Before we get into your game, Ryan, I want to know, so my mother, like, she watched one episode of this, right, and she's from a small town in Pennsylvania, and she is just like, these people, they're so morally disgusting, I don't understand it, I don't know how you watch it, she's like, that's just, like, not real, it's not society. I actually watch it, and I'm like, I don't know, those characters kind of seem a lot like people I know, you know, like it's not that far.
That's what I like about the show. To me, it's very real.
Do you guys feel like perhaps we, our society at this point, is slipping into maybe a medieval world at all?
Well, you know,
I think it's always been that way.
It's interesting, like to call back to one of the first subjects we talked about the world building, is that, you know, these people exist in the world that George R. R. Martin wrote them into, but he really did base a lot of it off of real-life medieval families, and we kind of talked about that in episodes past. Go ahead and subscribe and watch our other videos. But it's you take real people. I mean, it's basically all entertainment is. Every movie, every TV show is based on the human condition and what humans will do and react to and how they'll behave and it's because that's what we want to empathize with. Even when you look at an animated show about rats or cats, it's all what are we and what are we doing here and why do we care? And so you're taking humans, human beings, and putting them in a fantasy world, and I think they're acting exactly the way we would. I mean, maybe not all of them, but there's definitely been people throughout history who can probably fit into every single character.
I mean, if you were put into, say, Arya's shoes at her age, how would you behave? Like, I would start killing people, too, if I saw my dad's head get shot. You know what I mean? Like, you take a normal person and you put them in these situations, and you don't glorify the acts. I don't think they're doing too much glorification of the violence on the show.
And there's not a whole lot of police in the show.
Yeah, there isn't. And it's just like not being shown on camera, right? Like all the things that politicians in the United States do don't make the news because they're careful to cover it up. Whereas in Game of Thrones, there is no media. There is no police. They just do what they do in the town square and there's no repercussions.
Well, our viewers and our media companies are obviously getting a lot more comfortable with anti-heroes. From, Tony Soprano might have been the real major one, but even anti-heroes in our comedies, you know, Ed O'Neill on Married with Children, a protagonist that, I mean, wasn't much great
so
about
awful.
Him.
Yeah.
Homer Simpson. I mean, the anti-heroes, Game of Thrones has taken it to another level. So we see it in drama and in comedies. We've gotten way more comfortable with it. We can root for, as long as we identify with someone or sort of like them in some way, we don't need to see good behavior from them, a la Arya, as you were just saying, a la Sansa. I mean, Sansa made some very questionable ethical decisions, but I think she was gaining respect via doing that. She became more the boss lady as she was doing that, even though they were very Cersei-like actions.
And you guys both, I think everyone pretty much mentioned it, hit it on the head with, they have to be likable. Even if they're a bad guy, even if they do terrible things, even Ramsay Bolton was the worst, right? But we liked him because why? And sometimes I can't put my finger on it because if I straight up look in the camera, I loved Ramsay Bolton as a character. People would be like, "What is wrong with you?" But the fact is,
he provided needs value to the story,
yeah. Right? And there, I mean,
we got to see his motivations as well. I mean, these are characters who are flawed and real people, and they do bad things, and we're still going to root for them because we really get an inside look at their families, their histories, their motivations for what they do. And I think that's what a lot of shows don't do out there. It's not really giving us reason to understand these characters and be able to even get on that level with them where we can understand why they're making the choices they did. Usually it's just like, here's the bad guy, this is his decision, and here's the hero who's stopping him and their story, but you never get the bad guy's love interest. You never see what he's doing in the bedroom. In this show, you do.
Right. There's a really popular screenwriting book. Most writers are familiar with it, but if you're interested in screenwriting and you want to take a look, it's called Save the Cat, and it basically drops that token of knowledge in the very beginning is you have to make any character likable. They have to save the cat in the beginning, and that if you pay attention, you look closely, anytime they introduce a new character in this show or any good show, the first thing you'll find, you pay attention, is like there's that one thing that they do that makes you like them. And then after that, they can pretty much get away with anything.
That reminds me of the pilot of, what is that political show on Netflix that made
House of Cards.
Thank you. House of Cards.
The first thing he does is kill the dog.
Yeah. So they're establishing a villain by doing that.
I never even thought about it. It's like the antithesis of save the cat. He kills the dog.
Yeah.
That's
crazy.
Yeah. And
Ryan,
you're like,
let's play your game. I can't wait any longer.
You guys play a game?
I'm so excited.
Oh, boy.
I'm ready.
All right, guys. Today, we're playing a little game called Who Said That?
I'm nervous.
Okay, I'm not going to look at your screen because I'm guessing you have the answer.
I'm now looking. All right, guys, so in this game, Who Said That? I'm going to be saying a quote that a character said on the show.
Because the writing is so good.
Because the writing is great. And you get a point if you can name who said that, and you get another bonus point if you can say who they said that to.
Oh, no.
Oh, okay.
And if you guys are playing at home, we'll give you a little bit of time before we give our answers. And if you have any favorite quotes from the Game of Thrones show, please go ahead and leave them in the comments down below. We always love to read your comments.
Ooh, that's
we
a
love
good
you
one.
We
I want to
whole
read
show on
favorite
this.
Quotes.
We did, yeah.
Favorite quotes, comment down below. All right, guys. So for the first one, I think this is a pretty easy one, just to get it warmed up.
Woo! Are we raising our hands, or how are we doing this? Is just the first one to blurt it out?
Hit your microphone real hard.
I guess just make a buzz sound or something. All
okay,
right.
Buzz.
After buzz. All right, guys.
Great.
First quote. The things I do for love. Who says that?
Oh, Buzz.
Jeremy.
That was Jamie to his beloved Cersei after the big push.
After the big push on episode one that pulled us in. Ding, ding. There it is.
Nice job, Jaydan.
Two points for Jaydan. Jaydan, I love it. All right, guys, next up. Power resides where men believe it resides. It's a trick, a shadow on the wall.
I know.
Tell us, Professor.
Lord Varys.
Yes, it was. And who did you say that to?
Tyrion.
He did. Oh. He did. If you didn't get it,
speaks to Tyrion.
Dang. Yeah, that's true. It's true.
Even when he's just in a box.
Yeah. If you didn't get that right away, which. Touche, you did. I was going to drop the next sentence that he said was, and very small men can cast a very big shadow.
Oh.
But
the professor didn't need it. Professor, annoying!
Million points. I think I'm spent. I think I'll just go.
Yeah, you can leave now. All right, guys, next quote. What we don't know is what usually gets us killed.
That's hard. I don't know.
Oh.
Who is that whispering? What?
What we don't know.
Exactly.
Is what usually gets us killed.
I'm gonna guess.
Okay.
I can guess.
Littlefinger.
Is right!
Yeah. Oh, okay. I was gonna guess too.
My hint was gonna be, what we don't know usually gets us killed.
Okay,
perfect. I'm gonna guess Sansa. Yeah, Sansa. Right?
A Littlefinger to.
Sansa.
No.
No. That's what we all thought.
No.
Shoot!
This was the scene where he's speaking to Roz and the other whore in the whorehouse. He goes,
Associate.
Shay?
She goes, it wasn't Shay.
Shoot.
It was when he was teaching them how to do what they do.
Mm.
And she was saying, I didn't know that, my lord. What we don't know usually gets us killed. He's dropping another little gem of knowledge on her. And Roz did eventually die.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Cool. I got the point.
You got 1 point. I got like a half point. Thank you.
Yep.
All right, guys. A couple more. Quote. If we don't put aside our enmities and band together, we will die. And then it doesn't matter whose skeleton sits on the Iron Throne.
That was Davos Seaworth.
Yes.
Wow.
I was bringing people together.
Guns loaded.
Enmities. Well, you remember we're enmities. Like enmities.
Yeah,
it's an SAT word.
I skimmed it, but I was like finding really good quotes, and I was like, "Who's that? Our enemies?" Okay, and then I like typed it out. And I'm like, "I said enmities." Enmities.
Yeah. Who'd he say it to, Prof?
Who'd he say it to?
I think it was to Daenerys and the assembled people.
You got it!
Oh my god!
And Sir Davos doing his brilliant oratory to sway the decisions of world leaders once again.
I think that might have been in a season trailer.
I think it was in a trailer.
It's kind of burnt into my skull.
Okay, so I think the whole show is burnt into your skull. Pretty good fan. All right, guys. All right, one more. Next time I have an idea like that, punch me in the face. Who said that?
And to whom?
Next time I have an idea like that, punch me in the face.
I'm gonna guess Jon Snow.
Smaller.
I was gonna say Tyrion, yeah.
I was gonna ask if it was translated from Dothraki. He didn't do any Dothraki lines.
I did, Ich lache nur nach Freiling Char. Who was that?
Khal Drogo!
My
moon, my sun, my stars.
That, and who did Tyrion say that to?
Bronn?
No, but the idea. I'll give you a hint. His idea was to go down and to hang out with some dragons. He wanted to go and release
Daenerys?
The dragons.
Did you say Daenerys?
Oh.
Or Grey Worm or Missandei.
So Tyrion
went down.
He realized the dragons needed to be free. Daenerys needed her dragons back. He went down there, befriended them, and released their shackles. And it was Varys who helped him.
It was Varys.
So one line from Varys to Tyrion, one from Tyrion to Varys.
Nice.
Well, I'll take the point.
I have the professor at 3, Kristen at 1, Amber at 1, and Ryan at 2.
Let's go one more. Bonus round. Here we go. Next. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm going to read the second half of the quote.
Oh.
Okay, if you need the first half, I'll give it to you. The second half is, big men fall just as quick as little ones.
I feel like someone said it to Tyrion.
Well, the beginning of the quote goes, my father told me big men fall just as quick as little ones.
So
this is a tough one. That's
who
what I
had about. A father?
Who had a father? And his father
it's either
is
Jamie.
No longer around.
It's Jamie to Tyrion or Tyrion to Cersei. I don't know, but it's the Lannisters.
Rob Stark.
Yay!
Pretty close. It was Jon Snow to Corin Halfhand.
Okay. I completely lost.
When he's,
because Ned always had lessons to his children, so I was like, okay, it has to be one of the Stark children who. But I didn't think of Jon as my father, because he doesn't really ever speak of him.
Doesn't really know, and he doesn't really speak like that to people. It was kind of, and that's why he took the words out of his father's mouth. He needed to show balls.
Leadership.
In that scene.
Well,
he really
I think
did.
Because you knew the answers, the winner is Jeremy Dan!
Yay! Jeremy, you win!
Do I get a free mug?
What who
do I
said
get?
That?
J. Dan did!
Did someone, who said that?
well, guys, not. I think we might be out of time.
No!
I think so, yeah.
But you can follow me, Kristen Elizabeth Snyder, at Cinematic Escape. Please always go, to AfterBuzz TV and our YouTube page and like and subscribe. We've got all kinds of different shows here, all kinds of different genres. And if you continue to suggest content to us, we'll provide that to you. And where can we find you, Ryan Melly?
You can find me everywhere at Ryan Melly. And, guys, thank you so much again. It's always a pleasure. Happy holidays. It's around that time of year.
Yeah, I think we're going to try to get in one more show in December, the week of, December 17th or something.
We're
going to
try. So stay tuned. Follow us. Follow us all. If you like the show, give us a thumbs up, because we love doing it for you, and to see your support just means everything for us. Amber?
You guys can follow me at Amber Plaster on Instagram and Twitter. And thanks for having me back on the show.
Welcome back.
Thanks for being here.
You guys are fantastic. We want you back.
Yes.
As often
this
as
was
you
an amazing show.
I want to talk about Christmas in Westeros now.
Please.
Christmas in Westeros.
I feel like Christmas in July, but more blood.
They have some holidays. Name Day. And
it would
some
definitely
others,
be a bloody Christmas.
It would
for
be.
Sure.
For sure.
Yeah. I'm dreaming of a red Christmas.
Jay Dan, where can we find you or your book or how do we get in touch with you at all?
I'll be hanging out in a booth at a Dairy Queen, so just find me there.
Okay.
But seriously, the name of your book, it's on Amazon. You're a published author. What's the name of it so we can go grab it?
Anecdotal.
Aww.
Written under the pen name J. Brooks Dan.
Very mysterious, fantastic. This professor.
I know.
Secrets out.
A faceless man.
Yeah. Right.
All right, guys. Same time, same place, maybe. December 17th, I'm thinking we're looking at 6 p.m. If you guys have an idea for what you want us to talk about, leave it in the comments, and we will.
Shout out to Janine from Colorado for always being a big fan, for a fan shout-out. Thank you.
All right,
God
guys.
Bless. Vala Doharis, Vala Magulis.
Have a great night.
Bye-bye.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the AfterBuzz TV studios. Ryan Melati here. We wanted to give you some of the latest Game of Thrones-related news from the month. Jeremy Dan, to my left, has a story for us.
Well, there's an interesting nugget in USA Today today that I picked mostly so I could say USA Today today, which is always fun. But there's a little piece about the security around Game of Thrones and the links to which people are trying to go to see what's happening on the set, because that's really a show where if you just see a character on the set or see the armor that's being used on a set, you can really understand a lot about the show. And
right.
So they talk about some of the scripts being kidnapped and held for ransom and things like that. The disappearing virtual scripts that the cast had a few days to memorize and then they disappeared. And it also links to an article from last week, which is an interview on HuffPost with David Nutter, who's one of the real prominent directors on the show, and he talks a lot about the secrecy, amongst other things. So those are some good reads if you're interested about this essentially cottage industry of people trying to, you know, hype up the show, learn about it, steal secrets, and publish those to the world.
That's very interesting. I know that if I see anything, it's a huge tell. I mean, we're all a bunch of geeks and nerds. You see one piece of armor, we know which house carved that armor and who's wearing it, you know, and why they're wearing it. We all look into it. We love to speculate, but Game of Thrones has definitely been cracking down on that stuff every sequential season.
Most definitely. I think there were, when they had the Battle of the Bastards, there were a lot of people taking pictures from afar of the different standards yeah. and flags, and they kind of knew the way a lot of that was going to factor out.
And as much as we want to know what happens, I think I commend HBO and the producers of Game of Thrones for mm-hmm. trying their darndest to keep it a secret, because we really want to wait to open that present on, well, it feels like Christmas Eve, but we got to wait till Christmas Day.
Some people obviously want to shake the package to figure out what's
yeah,
in it.
Yeah, that's exactly it. We got to wait till April for it. It's a very cool story. Thank you. Jeremy, for my segment, I wanted to talk about, since today's episode we talked about the writing of Game of Thrones and the most important writer of them all, George R.R. Martin. He actually wrote a novella back in the 1980s called Nightflyer. And we are going to show you that trailer. Here's a description from Entertainment Access on YouTube. This show is based on George R.R. Martin's novella and set in the future on the eve of Earth's destruction. A crew of explorers journey on the most advanced ship in the galaxy, the Nightflyer, to intercept an alien spacecraft, one that might just hold the key to their survival. Enjoy this trailer.
This is a warning, not a distress call. Do not board the ship. Do not bring the Nightflyer back to Earth.
Ooh, ooh, ooh.
Oh, we can narrate?
Yeah.
Nice. Scary.
Nightflyers is a haunted house story on a starship. It's Psycho in space.
And to space we go.
Great.
Nightflyers is like nothing you've seen before.
It's awesome. Exciting stuff.
I can't wait to actually see it come alive on the screen.
This was an extremely ambitious set to build.
It's acres of spaceship.
Should be epic.
They've been doing a lot of epic sets.
Yeah.
Series in three words. It would be just f***ing awesome.
Wow, my God. That's so cool. You know, we didn't get really a chance to talk about this episode, but I wanted to talk about really what is the difference between sci-fi and fantasy other than the obvious. But I think it is obvious now what the difference is. I mean, this is, I think you've mentioned a moment ago before we hit record, Game of Thrones in space.
Well, that's The Expanse.
The Expanse. And
which was real, you know, a show I was watching over the last couple of years that was picked up via Amazon after it was canceled on Sci-Fi Network. A lot of people liken that to being Game of Thrones in space. And now we get to see, even though it's a little bit of a different genre, this horror genre and the haunted house in space, but we get to see the real Game of Thrones author doing his take on space. So that'll be really interesting.
There's a Variety article here in front of me. This was written by George R. R. Martin in 1980, and there was a 1987 film adaptation that followed, and Martin believes that it saved his life and career during a low point. And, quote, now that the story has been adapted for the small screen by Sci-Fi as well, through Martin's contractual commitments to HBO, it precludes him from having any formal involvement in it, although he did write it and he is involved.
Other than appearing in the trailer and typing it.
And like selling his name and stuff. But hey, it works. I love his work.
Maybe he can do cameos. I think that would be a good way to work him in.
He's almost like the new Stan Lee in a way, isn't he?
Yes, and we need a new Stan Lee.
I know, now
although
we do.
We'll never have another Stan Lee.
R.I.P. indeed.
We could do it. I mean, that's a real shout out because that's some real stuff that just happened as well in every show.
every nerd
should be talking about that.
Every show in the fantasy sci-fi mm-hmm. world should give respects and respects are due for Stan Lee and congrats to George R. R. Martin for keeping on keeping on. So yeah, I'm excited to see it. Night Flyers and Game of Thrones coming back in April, guys. Thanks so much for being back here in the studio with us. I'm Ryan Malotti.
And I'm Jeremy Dan.
And we'll see you next time here at AfterBuzz TV.